Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 162, episode 4 of The Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness. It's Thursday, December 3rd, 48 days until January 20th. It's more impressionistic. We're not saying a specific number of days.
Really.
It's a vibe. It feels 48-ish days until January 20th. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Jack O'Brien, I'm O'Brien, and I host Daily Zeit. That is courtesy of Chris Yamaguchi Maine, because he heard that I was into that band called The Beatles.
Those upstarts.
Yeah. So, yeah. Hey, shout out to him. And I'm thrilled.
I want to hear the end of that song. If you can keep that going, Daily
Zeit. Really spell those chords out. Pick them out.
Hey, I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
Well, I try and try to forget you, fool, and it won't be hard to do. Every day we're closer to firing you.
Whatever happened to my vocal cords right there? I think they were blown out from too many AKAs, and that one comes from Johnny Davis, the compulsive punster on Discord. Thank you
the
so much.
Compulsive punster?
Punster.
Oh, punster. Got it. Love it.
I wonder, Johnny, you go to those punning competitions? I know they have that shit where people go and throw down puns. It's very interesting, that whole world.
What a subculture. Yeah. Well, Miles, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by the hilarious and talented Joey Clift.
That's right. I'm Joey Clift. Hey, Trump, something vote, but you won't be president. I did a Beatles thing and a politics thing. That's what we're doing, right?
I like that.
Yeah, I remember.
Perfect part approximation.
I remember part of a line of "Hey Jude" by the Beatles. That's all I got.
Yeah. Hey Dude, right? That's the song.
Hey Dude.
Yeah. I love that song.
Yeah.
It's crazy that they ripped off that Nickelodeon show to write that song.
Yeah.
Joey, what's good, man? How have you been since last we talked? What was that, like 2019?
It was like, I want to say it was like early 2020. And yeah. I would say that like, I've been pretty good. The first couple months of 2020, I traveled a bunch, got flown around a lot of places, do a lot of shows. And then around March, that immediately stopped for some weird reason.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just been kind of hanging out. I just got...
What, you tweet something spicy? You get canceled? Is that what happened?
Tweet something spicy. Yeah. I got canceled by
the work just dried up, huh? Yeah, I hate to see it.
Yeah. Just, yeah, you know, it happens. And then I just started writing on a show called Spirit Rangers on Netflix, which I've been doing since May. And
I saw that, man. Congrats. Busy.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's super cool. So that's kind of, it's been a lot of that. It's been a lot of sitting in this room that you can see on the camera that people listening to can't see.
How is writing for a TV show during the pandemic? What, you guys,
how are those Zoom rooms?
Zoom room?
I mean, honestly, it's like, it's not too bad. Something that I've learned is that like, you can do a lot of like prop comedy bits in writer's rooms really easily.
Yeah.
'Cause like you can't see the edges of it. So I do a lot of like, oh, look, I'm like, it's a puppet, but it's really my Beats headphone container. Like, you know, that's why I get paid the big bucks to write for TV.
Exactly.
Bits like that. Yeah.
I got to get on that, man. Hey, how do I get one of those gigs?
Yeah, just like, oh, you buy Beats headphones, and then just this comes with it, and you know, it's
say
like
less,
if you you know, if you buy a MacBook and you just like lie and say you're still a college student, they'll give it to you for free. So like, yeah, you know, I mean, that's how you get that.
When's the show going to production? If you don't mind spilling the beans from
so,
what's going on?
Yeah,
in
sure.
There.
We started writing in May. I think that it's all like kind of TBD, but I think that like. Because it's animated, those tend to take a little while to make. So like 2022 is kind of what we're looking like, but I'm excited about it. It's going to be dope as hell.
Yeah. And for people who don't know, it's like an all native show. The room is also, is it diverse, or it's a lot of like indigenous and native writers as well?
I mean, it's diverse in that it's an all native room, but no, it's diverse in that like the showrunner Shumash, I'm Cowlitz. One of the writers is like, Oklahoma based, I forget her tribe, but she's great. So it's diverse within indigenous people.
Right.
Nice.
But it's an all native writers room. It's a preschool show. It's the first ever United States preschool show, that's animated to like feature an all native writers room and be created by a native creator, Carissa Valencia, who's Shumash, who's a really great, animation writer. Yeah, it's just good shit all around. It's like a super fun show to be a part of. You know, the life of a writer. I'm going to say there's a lot of stealthy naps between meetings because my bed's right here. So there's a lot of joke. Oh, we got a meeting in 30 minutes. Oh, I'm just going to take a little
breather. I stole 12 minutes before we recorded.
Yeah. It's good, right? Man.
30, yeah, you can do 30. It's,
I don't.
Oh,
I don't fall
napper.
Asleep. I just like my brain like kind of goes into a different form of like spinning out.
Yeah,
but it's like a more relaxing one, and I feel a little bit more energized when I stand up from it.
That reminds me, like when I worked on a PA, like and did overnight shoots, and like you'd have like your 15 or 30, like at 3:30 in the morning, and you're like, well, I'm just gonna kind of like put my brain to sleep slightly, and then you're like, huh. Yeah, fine. I'm locking down this part of the set. I'm locking it up. I'm locking it up.
Yeah, it's the like go to your car and close your eyes for 5 minutes and then be like, oh shit, I've got to do another thing. It's like you tell your like friend who's a PA, just like, hey, if there's something important, like call me twice and then I'll wake up and
exactly.
do it. You know, and then like I'll do the same for you in an hour or two. Wait, what is your longest PA shift? Or the longest you've ever worked as a PA in terms of like hours in one day?
My longest was probably 16. Hours.
Ah, that sucks.
When I worked on Hell's Kitchen, because that set is 24 hours. So
they're
always, there's never a break. Like, you know, I remember I did like 3 p.m. to 6 a.m. once. That was a weird one.
Why is it 24 hours? Why?
Because on the show, they live on the set. All the contestants to Hell's Kitchen, they live on set, like in a dorm, basically, that's also camered up. And so that's where you get all the drama in between when they have to compete in the restaurant and blah, blah, blah.
People getting tired, making bad decisions.
Exactly.
So my worst was probably I was a PA for a break.com sketch shoot. They were shooting like a sizzle reel or something like that. In 2011, it was 18 hours and I made a cool $50.
Hey, there he is.
Actually, it was It was $50. And then when they realized that I'd been there for 18 hours, they were like, let's like, we'll look through the budget. We'll see if we can give you some more. Then I got my check and I got $58.
Hey,
I'd love to see it.
Oh yeah, bro, man. I bought such a half of a Subway sandwich for that.
Oh God.
Break.com. Shout out to break.com.
Yeah. RIP.
Yeah.
Break.com. Not a web. If you go to break.com, it's not a website anymore.
Oh really?
It's like a landing page for like a ISP or something.
Yeah. It's like, would you like to buy break.com?
Oh, no.
Yeah, so the internet bubble. Yeah. I mean, yeah, if you want. It was
finally,
the biggest
my B-boy website can have life again. Break.com.
Yeah. Finally, my fan site on the Breakin' movies can exist.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, Joey, we're going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we're going to tell our listeners a few of the things we're talking about. We're going to talk about the battle between AOC and Joe Coal Mine Manchin. Defund my butt is the sort of dope takes you get from him.
Classic.
Literally word for word. That was one of the things he said during the Black Lives Matter protests. Trump is making things like as he continues to kind of insist that a coup is happening, he's making it very dangerous for even Republican voting officials. Bill Barr is now an enemy of the state. And Michael Flynn is calling openly for a military coup. That's something that happened. Once you get pardoned for just like everything, just all that over there, which seems to be what the pardon was. I think you get a little bit of a hop in your step and you start to think you can take over the government. So we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about Pepsi. We're going to talk about Melania's Christmas decorations, all of that, plenty more. But first, Joey, we like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
A lot of my search history over the past couple of days have been just like Googling like weird things that I want to buy for my house and room and stuff. So I spent 4 hours researching the perfect office chair not too recently.
Ooh.
It's a Steelcase Gesture. I'm getting in a couple of days. Very excited about it.
What's it called? A Steelcase Gesture?
Steelcase is the brand and the Gesture. It's basically one of those office chairs where you could like move the arms around, like the arms are really flexible, so you can like move it like right up to your like laptop so you don't get carpal tunnel. I would say that the thing that's the most telling of me is Googling Olive Garden dessert lasagna. A couple months ago or earlier this month, I realized I was at like 8,000 Twitter followers and I wanted to be at like a kind of a just an even 10,000 by the end of the year. So around election time, I just tweeted out like, hey, if I get 10,000 Twitter followers by the end of the year, I'll film myself eating lasagna like Garfield. So like barehanded, tossing to my mouth. And I got it within like a day. And then I was just like, oh shit, wow. This is the thing I actually got to do. So then I was just Googling like, okay, so like, how am I going to do that? What kind of lasagna am I going to get? And I was like, oh, I want three kinds of lasagna. Olive Garden has like deep fried appetizer lasagna. They have giant family size lasagna plans and they have a dessert lasagna, which is like a multi-layer brownie. And I was like, I want to throw that in the general direction of my face as hard as possible.
Now, wouldn't this just kick off a debate on how we're defining lasagnas and cakes? Because
Anything I think of
a multi-layered brownie, and as I evoke images upon my computer of this thing, it's looking like a cake. Now, yeah, I guess it's a semantic thing, but I'm also like, when is lasagna a cake?
I mean, I guess that like the other end of it is like a three layer cake a lasagna,
right?
Like what are the main categories and what are the subcategories of this? Like, is lasagna just like a pasta cake? Maybe.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's how I order.
If we're stacking,
always.
It's cake.
Yeah.
Or a casserole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But casseroles don't necessarily have stacks.
Huh. But is like an Oreo a cake then? Because like an Oreo is a cookie, right? But it's like
Oreo's a sandwich.
Sandwich cookie. I think I've accepted it's a sandwich cookie.
Or is an Oreo a cookie lasagna?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you can make cookie lasagna with an Oreo, which is something I do every night
stacking.
Of my life.
So
you take one of the sides off of two cookies and then you put it together so it's almost a Big Mac. But if you go, if you want to go even larger than that, because you're especially depressed, you can turn it into a full lasagna.
Six by six.
Oh, I'm not sure whether I should envy you or severely pity you. I'm going to go with envy.
Actually, you should pity me. Just pity me. I'm the one who gets the text messages with the photos of them in the middle of the night. He's like, look, I did it. They said I couldn't do it. 14 of them. And look how clean they are. You think they made them in the factory. Look how clean it is. Look how clean it is. I'm like, all right, dude.
Miles, I think those might be cries of help from your friend, man.
I don't know. I just keep doing what I do and fucking with them. Be like, could be cleaner, Jack. Could be cleaner. Maybe try again, buddy. Like,
yeah, what if that had another layer of cookie on it, bro?
B-. Right. Nice
I think
try.
I just saw that on Reddit. Defund on my shitty ass. Cookie yeah. stacks.
Yeah. Wait, is shitty cookie stacks a real subreddit?
No, but I think that's always the joke on Reddit when people will suddenly just name a subreddit in a comment being like, "Are shitty cookie stacks."
I mean, if there was, I'm on my computer right now. I was just about to subscribe to shitty cookie stacks because that'd be yeah. delightful to look at.
Or it's awful.
One of my favorite subreddits right now is there's a subreddit that's like r/tuckedinkitties that's just cats that are tucked in by blankets. And it's like, it's the most adorable thing you've ever seen in your damn life.
Seeing an animal tucked in is almost like a yawn, like where you see it and you're like, oh, I'm cozy too. I'm cozy too.
Oh, like, yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's just like, oh, that cat's like, that. Somebody tucked that cat in and gave it a little pillow. That makes me feel cozy.
It is so hard for me not to fall asleep when I'm reading my kids' bedtime stories and like getting them to fall asleep. Like parents who just are like, all right, and then I go back to work for 4 hours. Like I just... I'm so
it winds
tired.
You down too.
Oh my god, yeah.
I got a question for you as somebody who reads kids bedtime stories. What bedtime Go stories ahead. Slap, and what bedtime stories are like overrated? Like, what are your favorites, and what are your like? Oh, this man, one sucks.
Turn it on me as we're about to head into your underrated, overrated. I would say Dr. Seuss still holds up. Right. There's a guy named what's his name who does the Elephant and Piggy books. They're our listeners have heard all of this plenty of times. Berenstain Bears, a little wordy and very like
Mo Willems
Christian. Mo Willems is the gentleman. He does good work with the Elephant and Piggy books. They have a real rhythm to them. And you're like burning through pages. There's like one exchange on each page. So my son will think we've read a really long story, but it's not quite that long. And that's always the balancing act that you're trying to do. Is
so like so your son is like, Daddy, I want to go to bed, and you're like, no, we got to figure out what happens to this piggy,
right?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, there's some good ones. They've done good work, and any that are like that. There's one that's like Pat the Puppy and Pat the Kitty that I think were created like before children's books were invented because they are so dumb. It's clearly like the evolutionary like missing link between whatever they did before the written word and like our modern children's books, because it's just like, Sally has a nice puppy. You have a nice puppy. Pet Sally's puppy. And it sucks. The drawings are me quality, and I had never drawn.
Me qual.
The kid, like the kids who Sally from page to page looks like a totally different person.
cool.
Yeah, they suck.
Dude, Mo Willems is a interesting looking fellow. He looks like, I'm just going to send this in the chat. It like, you know, like when you watch a sci-fi film about some dystopia and then there's like an image of like, and that was the man who conceived the Matrix or whatever. And it's just like not, they're not a character. It's just like an image. Willems has the vibe of like the architect.
Whoa,
of the Matrix.
Mo,
you are not. Yeah, that's a dude that has definitely ascended a different level of consciousness than the rest of us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Shout He's like, that's why him. I write kids' books, bro. Like, you're fucking around with this history nonsense. You got to get him young. Okay.
He's sort of the Ang Lee of children's books in that, like, some of his book, like, he has this Elephant and Piggy thing that's, like, real quick, rhythmic, like, back and forth. But then he has, like, a bunch of different books that are really good
depth,
executions.
Huh?
Yeah, he's just, like, he doesn't have a specific style.
And his way of looking at dystopia, very Wong Kar Wai as well, I would say. You know, shout out.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
He kind of looks like Jurgen Klopp, for any football fans out there, the manager of Liverpool. He's got the same vibe.
I'm sure, like, if you talk to him, he would probably talk to you for 4 hours about how, like, you see the elephant is representative of the earth and the piggy is global warming.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Okay.
But hey, one that that still slaps that, like, shouldn't, but, like, they've just, like, created some strange alchemy is Goodnight Moon. It's like they...
Oh, yeah.
The drawings are fine, but, like, just the world that they've created with the words and the, like, rhythm and all that is so undeniable, but it's really... I don't know why.
It's my favorite Simpsons bit when Christopher walks.
Christopher walks. Goodnight, Moon.
Goodnight.
Come closer, children.
Children.
Joey, what is something you think is underrated?
So something that I think is underrated, I'm gonna say video game soundtracks. Mm-hmm. And my reason for that is they're really good to write to. They're really good to listen to. They're just like great background music, and it's also just great music. And like, the reason I'm saying that is I'm somebody where, like, if you would have asked me what my favorite music was in, you know, like, high school, middle school, probably early college, I would say, like, oh, video, like, the Final Fantasy soundtracks and professional wrestler entrance music are the two things I listen to.
Oh, hell yeah.
And then, like, as I entered my adult life, I was like, oh, is that embarrassing that that's, like, my favorite, that, like, people are like, yo, you listen to the Beatles? And I'm like, no, I listen to Nobu Uematsu.
Yeah.
So then I like steered away from that. And then like, but then like, as I've, especially like over COVID, this week, the Spotify year in review things came out. And I checked my Spotify year in review and it was like entirely just like jazz covers of JRPG soundtracks.
Oh,
like my
man.
Top five. So I was like, oh, I'm just gonna step into my truth and be like, yeah, video game soundtracks rule. The specific shout out, the Undertale, they did a 5-year anniversary Undertale symphony that you can watch on YouTube that's like 3 hours long, and it's just like a full orchestra doing the Undertale soundtrack. And it's great. You should check it out. I write to it all the time.
Recently, I think because someone posted on Reddit the entire Jet Set Radio soundtrack.
Oh, and like
The composer, Hideki Naganuma, like I think it's on Spotify too. And I was like, damn, this shit's on Spotify. Like, great. Normally, it's like some shit you'd have to watch YouTube, like rips of. But respect to the Jet Set Radio soundtrack, because that thing was wild.
Well, it's also just shit like, something I love about video game music is when you see those composers that like clearly put way more work into it than they really needed to for like the Marble Madness NES soundtrack or something.
Right. Where it's just like, I never got paid for that actually.
Yeah, I made $30 on that and I composed that on a calculator or whatever.
But they did give me a Nintendo Power Glove as compensation, so I feel it was a fair trade.
Oh, I mean, in 1989, that's big money. You could trade that for a car if you wanted to.
Oh yeah, I mean, we saw the movies. The kids were traveling across country to get their hands on that thing.
Oh yeah, I mean, I would if there was a Power Glove and I had to drive to Florida to get it, I would drive to Florida to get that Power Glove.
Is there a classic game that is like super underrated in terms of like how great its soundtrack is by public, not amongst the video game music aficionados?
I mean, like, where do I start?
Sonic is really good, right? Don't people really like Sonic?
Oh, Sonic Rush, especially. People love that
Sonic
one.
Sonic is good. Like Michael Jackson, uncredited, composed a bunch of music for Sonic the Hedgehog 3. So it's wow. Legit.
I didn't know that. Damn.
Yeah, Michael Jackson. It was uncredited. And it's like, you can listen to, like, Strangers in Moscow is clearly, like, it's like the Sonic the Hedgehog 3... like ice level clearly became Strangers in Moscow. Like if you listen to both of them, it's like the same melody. And it's clear that was like the version of that. And like, there's a bunch of other, it's like, I'm sure there's like YouTube rabbit holes that you can go down to that are like the casino level thing became bad or whatever, you know, but stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I would say like, let's see, things that I go back to. So this is going to be underrated because OG PlayStation startup noise from Dan the Engineer, good stuff. So this is going to be underrated just because I don't think a ton of people know about it, but I want to shout it out. There's like an indie game that came out a couple years ago called Far Loan Sales. That's like, it's just this really cool, like dystopian kind of post-apocalyptic game. And the soundtrack to it, it's like, you can find it on Spotify. It's just some of the best like symphonic background music you could possibly listen to. It's just like, you know, it's like dystopian, but positive. And it's like, that's something like, that was my 2019 Spotify year in review, was just Far Loan Sales songs, you know, 1,000 times or whatever.
Damn.
I feel like you're going to turn a lot of people on to the magic of video game soundtracks here.
Yeah, just like give it a shot. Give it to that and pro wrestlers, professional wrestling entrance music and video game soundtracks.
I feel like,
that's all you need. Throw away your Cardi B's.
Don't need that. Just swap it out for this Metroid soundtrack.
Wet ass pussy. What about wet ass PlayStation?
Street Fighter soundtrack is one where I feel like you could play and I'm like, I know what level that is. Mm. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
There are certain things like that I feel like are more just drilled into my mind and sort of compositions that I'm like, that was actually an objectively really pleasant thing to listen to. That's where I will take these suggestions from you, Joey, and go.
Yeah, like the Guile level theme goes with literally anything.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
hell
it's
yeah.
just good shit. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Hell yes. What is something you think is overrated, brother?
Now that I've been in quarantine for 9 months, I'm going to say leaving my house to do things is very overrated. I'm really loving. Yeah, it might be a hot take. I really love just sitting at home. I don't know. I wake up early and do yoga. It's like, you know, doing Zoom birthday parties and stuff like that, and stuff over Zoom is kind of weird. But like, I don't miss driving places. Like, I don't miss those commutes. I don't miss, I don't mind, you know, doing Grubhub and then picking it up from someplace and like not eating in the restaurant or whatever. It's like all those are things that like I don't miss.
Yeah, right. Turns out.
It's something about like sort of just kind of realigning your schedule and like with your lifestyle and things like that, like when you've eliminated the commute or just the stress. Like I feel like maybe we're similar in that like having to get out the door is just stressful. And that not having that there, I'm like, I have so much mental bandwidth to like think of other things rather than like, what time is it? Oh, I got 15 minutes. Gotta wash. Fuck. I need to eat. Fuck it. I'll eat something off.
Yeah,
like
dude.
All that stuff. It takes up my mind so much to the point where I like, I feel sort of a bit of just from the lack of commute, a little bit more like just space in my mind to problem solve.
Like, yeah, dude. Like I put when I had to commute places for jobs, I would like put my cell phone like in my bathroom on my sink. And the second I got out of the shower, I would turn my cell phone and be like, oh shit, it's 8:15. If I don't leave by 8:20, I'm gonna have to whatever. So I'll brush my teeth in the car, I guess. You know, and then like, so it's like that stuff I don't miss at all. I haven't eaten breakfast while taking
a shower in so long. It's
Yeah, it's like that kind of thing.
No one knew what to do with that, like, Jack. We're all just kind of picturing you eating a burrito in a shower.
Yeah,
like Tobias Bluth.
And it's a messy breakfast. It's not a power bar. You're eating like French toast.
All over his chest.
Egg McMuffin. You're eating an egg McMuffin that you ordered extra runny.
Well, the eggs are already wet, so you're
That's right. But I mean, I guess I was thinking about that, like. Like when you said that, I paused because I was like, wait, are you a genius? Is that a thing?
That's like a life hack in like this brutalist, like fucking high output productivity nonsense culture where it's like, you gotta eat breakfast when you shit and then again when you shower.
Right. You put on your hoodie backwards with your like lunch stuffed in it so you can just like scarf it down while you're typing. Yeah.
It's fill up your hoodie with potato salad.
Yeah, like for me, the dystopian life hack was like I started to bring those like those tooth like flossing picks in my glove box in my car so that it's like, okay, I don't have to floss when I'm in my bathroom. I can do it while I'm driving.
Yeah.
And if anybody would look at me weird while flossing while driving, I'd just be like, fuck you. This is my life.
And then your steering wheel starts to smell bad and it has little flecks of white stuff all over it. That's the one problem.
Yeah. But I'm just like, hey, that's a price to pay for corporate efficiency.
For efficiency, baby.
To make these dollars for my boss.
Yeah.
I need to wash my car. I told you about the extra. Oh, wait, that's the inside of the windshield.
God.
Look,
that's the worst.
I told you about the extra $8 I made on that PA gig, right? That's how I make the big bucks.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff like that.
Maybe I might be overestimating how gross other people's flossing experiences are, but mine is a real mess. It's thrill.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Slaughterhouse.
I floss every day, so it's not too bad. Like,
yeah.
It's like I floss every morning, so it's
it
not.
It looks like that scene in Kingpin. When Randy Quaid flosses for the first time, and they're like, "Oh my god!" It's like, "Is that a chicken? Shit. A whole chicken wing on the piece of floss?"
Yeah, we've all been there.
That's funny.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. And we're back. And AOC v. Joe Coalmine. So, you know, we were talking yesterday about how the establishment Democratic Party is doing some Obama-era shit with regards to Biden's cabinet is being, you know, is being filled with people who don't really reflect the new energizing values of the progressive movement. And this is just like sort of the battle that we need, AOC and, Joe Manchin. So Joe Manchin, one of the first shots he fired was over the summer when he responded to the uprisings with, as mentioned up top, defund, comma, my butt.
Yeah.
Defund the comma is interesting.
Point. Also, I'm going to chime in and say that, like, if government funding was going toward his butt, then I agree. We should probably not spend money on that.
Right.
So, good point, Joe Manchin.
Golden bidets. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what the comma was for. I think
Maybe because he's saying, like, rather than defund my butt, he's like, defund my ass.
Right.
Like, we ain't defunding. So I just like that, you know, he liked to keep his dumb centrist takes grammatically accurate.
No, I think that what it was it's like he's saying defund and then comma, and then he's referring to AOC as his butt. So he's like, defund my butt.
Oh,
yeah. So he's giving permission.
Big misunderstanding. Yeah. Of course it was. See, you hate to see this kind of shit. But I mean, this is the thing that's going to be the fucking, the you know, culture war for the next 4 years and beyond is people just being like, hey, Democrats, wake the fuck up. You know how like the Republicans shed a layer and now they look like this? Well, the left has done that too. And now this is what it looks like. It's more progressive and it's more interested in actual equity and equality rather than like, I don't know, like as long as like the news isn't overwhelming, I'm going to just take that as a barometer for how well everyone else is. And yeah. Defund my butt was, you know, the first fucking shot. Then, like a few days ago, he was. I don't know why. I think because again, AOC has many things to say, especially as people come after her and the squad for being progressives. He said, "quote I don't know the young lady. I really don't. I never met her. I'm understanding she's not that active with her bills or in committee. She's more active on Twitter than anything else."
Ooh.
Okay. So I don't know the way to try and be very dismissive. There. That's coming from the guy who endorsed Susan Collins, you know, to be like, no, man, she's the real deal. She's the real spineless deal, y'all. You want to vote for her. She's just like me, birds of a feather. And this thing now, I mean, his record even further back, on multiple occasions, Joe Manchin has refused to back the Equality Act, which is, you know, adding protections for gender identity and sexual orientation to like Civil Rights Act, Fair Housing Act. He's like, nah, I don't know. Like, he's just always, you know, he's just a shitty fucking senator who's claims Democrat. And you're like, I don't know who this man is. So AOC comes back tweeting. Because this is it's like this man is he lives in a glass mansion and you're
his
throwing
name
rocks.
Is literally Mansion. His name is pronounced Mansion. Joe Mansion.
She said, quote, I find it amusing when politicians try to diminish the seriousness of our policy work, movement organizing and grassroots fundraising to, quote, she just tweets as though serious politics is only done by begging corporate CEOs for money through wax sealed envelopes delivered by Raven.
I mean, she's so good.
Thorough.
Yeah, something about I love about AOC is that like it's like she don't half step that shit. She goes straight to the throat every time.
Just right.
Yeah.
It's
right
it's
at just
like it's definitely a like it's definitely a you know if you step for the if you step to the queen you might you best not miss kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's just like oh Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin's coming in with defund my butt and AOC is just like bam. You
know? Yeah. Well, because that's like the emerging energy in the party, right? And unfortunately, on the right, it's just like who's has the most vitriolic racist take, you know? And like that's how you start accelerating your career. Or like people are like, oh, you check that fucking racist person out? Awesome. But on the left, you see more and more people are rallying around people who are like talking to these older politicians like they're their fucked up stepdad. Like, yo, shut the fuck up, bro. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I'm not even doing real work, asshole. Why don't you try it? And like they're like, oh my God. Like they just don't like generationally, just like establishment Republicans are having trouble with this, these Trumpers. They're like, I don't know. Like they don't respect the bullshit like we do. It's I don't know how to handle it. And I think there's something that people need. Again, we keep saying this. Look at that energy. Like these people, the squad and the other like sort of grassroots organizing type activists who are entering politics. They're the ones who understand what is going on the most and are speaking the most like how normal people are. And that's what's resonating rather than just like this, you know, dad joke shit of defund my butt and whatever, you know, lukewarm political takes he has. So it's all something else right now. And this, again, the battle continues because Obama had to weigh in with his awesome take about, you know, oh, you know, defund the police is too flashy and confusing for people, whatever the fuck it was, basically trying to throw cold water on that. And it's like, you know, how about, you know, you didn't do shit about any of this stuff either. So why don't you have a seat too, sir? I remember in like Ferguson, what was going on there, what was happening to activists then. And you're like, let's not get too into this. So, yeah, I think it's also time for people to recognize, like, if there are certain values you have, and you're not seeing that reflected in a party, you got to speak the fuck up or we need to talk about where the fuck we're going with this shit.
Well, yeah, I want to say two things on that. One, something that I really appreciate about AOC, you know, outside of like, you know, she's like closer to our age than 100 years old.
Right.
You know, she's like young. It's like, you know, her and a lot of the squad are like gamers. I feel like, you know, I feel like they can relate to my experiences so much more than your average politician probably can. That aside,
hey, Ron Johnson, man, he knows a little bit about video games.
Wait, what did Ron Johnson do?
No, I'm just saying, like, just comparatively, like, truly, these people actually do have lived experiences like we do.
And I think that she is so good at, like, breaking down, it's like breaking down policies and complex issues in a way, like, over Instagram stories in a way that we understand easily. You know, it's like the importance of Medicare for All, the Green New Deal, and all that. And then, kind of on your thought about Obama, what Obama said, something like I really appreciate right now, and I'm curious what you guys think about this, is like, I feel like we're at a point right now where politicians can just normal suck instead of being like, I don't know what mustard is and I refuse to learn. Like, right. It's like something that I appreciate about, you know, like, it sucks that Obama said that and like it's total bullshit, but it's like, oh, this feels like a real political conversation and not like a Four Seasons landscaping. The Three Stooges right. are running your campaign bullshit. You know, it's like, oh, this is like there's value in having this conversation. Well,
there is a way to look at it. Like if that's what it is, but I think it's all about more about how polling works and what is going to keep Democrats in power rather than looking at the issue of defunding police. Because again, in his administration, there was not much interest to address any of these things. So it's hard. So looking at that, I'm like, well, do you mean that? Because you're like, guys, I'm with this defund the police shit too, but we got to fucking message this a little bit differently. It just seems like he's going like, guys, don't play with that. Like, it's like kids in a yard with like running with scissors. It's like, don't do that. Oh, yeah. Don't do that. And I'm not going to explain much more than, but I feel that there is a conversation there that can explain things better. So for people who are just just reacting to the mere mention of the words defund the police, find a way to get through to those people. But I don't think it's a platform or a policy goal that needs to be abandoned, which I feel like is sort of like the two way, like he's kind of having it. He's walking a line with that comment too, because it can be seen as one or the other. But essentially, the take is always like that rhetoric hurts the Democrats.
Right. I feel like the Democrats need to, or the progressive movement needs to kind of have a reckoning that Obama is not on the progressive Democrat side. Like, he is the establishment. And I think both sides like the fact that he is, you know, this iconic figure of progress. But he, when it comes down to the policies that he actually advocates for, a lot of the time they're more in line with Joe Manchin than they are with AOC and like the things, the kind of common sense things that, you know, AOC and Bernie Sanders and the squad like talk about. So it's just, I feel like that's going to prevent, like, it would be easy for people on the progressive side to just be like, yeah, but like Obama said no, so like let's look elsewhere because he is popular and he's like the only cool politician, like according to the mainstream media.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that there is something too of like, I mean, like Miles, you were talking about this a second ago about like the, you know, there is kind of like, you know, like a little bit of a war brewing between in the Democrat Party, between the progressive wing and the more centrist wing. And yeah, but I don't know. It's like, I mean, AOC said this a lot of like every like hard progressive politician that ran like won, you know, in the 2020 election. You know, I think that that's kind of the hope, is that like, the Joe Manchins of the world get voted out and more AOCs get voted in that like listen to this shit and like actually care about things like Medicare for All, defunding the police, and like progressive policies. And that's,
it's just hard because like this whole battle is going to continue until progressives either create a third party or take over the Democratic Party like Trumpers did. I don't see the latter happening. It's just too deeply entrenched in like this corporatocracy model of private business, you know, holding hands with government and things like that. And the policies that progressives are calling for essentially upset that relationship between big business and politics. So it's like it would have to be some kind of massive philosophical shift for like the Tom Perez's of the world to kind of begin to be like, oh, yeah, like maybe we do need to do what's right for people rather than like, we need to do the thing that looks good, that seems like it's doing right for people, but is also hooking up the private sector too. Let's not get it fucked up. Like, because there's no policy that is ever going to be like, yo, we don't give a fuck about your profits. Anything right. Anything that does that, that says, hey, we're going to put people over your fucking profits as an industry or company, shit is never happening. This is never happening. And I think that's the big, that's like that last step that I think a lot of progressives are like, we have to shift into that world where we're saying, fuck your profits, because we need to worry about people. I don't know when that, how that shifts, unless, you know, progressives can be organized enough and leftists and everyone else saying like, we're not going to fucking vote with you anymore. Like the, what you're doing, like we're telling you, these people need rights. These people need restitution. These people need reconciliation. All these things, you're not giving it to them. So what the fuck good is it to support you? Like what, that's not what I'm, as a person, I'm looking for. So I need to find where that is, because it's not here. And I think that, I don't know. I mean, like, we'll see what that evolution looks like, but the tensions are going to simmer, because I think, again, the last 4 years have made a lot more people interested in politics. There are going to be plenty of people who are going to check right the fuck out on January 20th. I mean, guaranteed. But there's also, I think they're underestimating the amount of people who are like, hold on, man, this place is really fucked up, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. When it might just be like the bubble that I live in of, you know, Los Angeles and comedians. And I feel like more of my friends are like that than people that are going to be like, January 20th, let's start brunching or whatever. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I think that it's like, I definitely am feeling just this sentiment among my peers of like, yeah, fuck this shit. We should all, you know, nobody should have get in $1 million worth of debt for school and health insurance and stuff, you know.
Yeah,
like,
it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you know, and that's, you know, that's the knock on wood hope.
Yeah,
is that,
I think there's a generation of politicians that were able to like go to college and only have one job, and they're in office, and they're like, well, why are they complaining? Rather than looking at millennials and Gen Z and being like, yo, these people got fucking crushed. Like, and they came out of college, they can barely fucking get anything. And they don't realize the mindset is completely different. Our lived experience is almost antithetical to theirs in the sense of like what kind of upward financial social mobility there is for people, and how the middle class is just like a fucking like mirage at this point for anybody. So it's like people are kind of looking at it from very different places.
Does seem like we're headed in a direction where like people who are 40 and under are more friendly to socialist policy, and like the, I don't know, it's just like the more simple, straightforward, and consistent set of facts to advocate for, whereas like the people who are, you know, on the establishment side, like don't really have reason to back them up, where they have like 1,000 different reasons and not just one consistent like set of core beliefs. And like in the case of the establishment Democrats, they have the appearance of those beliefs. They have the, they claim that they believe those things, but that they're just being practical and working within the system. But I do feel like, I don't know, I'm hopeful that more and more people are going to kind of come to terms with the fact that the current system is completely fucked. And, you know, the more that politicians speak like AOC and, you know, in ways that are just like humans speak, and not like the establishment Democrats were.
People like, who have worked jobs that weren't given to them, you know?
Right.
That's the thing. It's like, get these people out of office who have had any kind of experience that is like out of touch with the 99% of the country, because now our system only works for like roughly 2%.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's take a step back into the world of Four Seasons landscaping. this dude is still the president, and he is in full blown denial mode over the results of the election, as he has been. As we mentioned on yesterday's episode, Barr came out and was like, there's not fraud, man. But his supporters left, you know, without him standing down or like admitting the reality of the situation, his supporters are in a very dangerous place.
Yeah, they're, because the rhetoric is, if you're a person on the right saying that the election was secure and there was no fuckery, you're a traitor and it's treason. And people are taking that very literally, to the point where, you know, like Georgia, right, has been a huge fucking focal point for a lot of this, for many different things, but especially with, you know, between Brian Kemp being like fucking public enemy number one and even the Secretary of State, they're all Republicans because they're like, no, our elections were secure and it was fair and there was no nonsense. Like, it was clean. They've all been basically put in the crosshairs of, you know, the Trumpers. And now the guy who heads up Georgia's voting system, this guy, Gabriel Sterling, he had a press conference because he's a Republican as well, but he keeps seeing all the shit that's happening to other Republicans who are just doing their job. I mean, like, yo, objectively, we know like an election has to be like free, safe, or whatever, as much as possible, asterisk there. But, you know, we're still getting attacked and no one is doing anything about it. So this is just a little bit of him out there trying just to yell at the media to, you know, condemn the rhetoric and try and defend, get some kind of defense for him and other Republicans who are just merely doing their job, you know, facilitating elections.
This is elections. This is the backbone of democracy. And all of you who have not said a damn word are complicit in this. I'm going to do my best to keep it together. Because it has all gone too far. All of it. Joe DeGeneva today asked for Chris Krebs, a patriot who ran CISA, to be shot. A 20-something tech in Gwinnett County today has death threats and a noose put out saying he should be hung for treason because he was transferring a report on batches from an EMS to a county computer so he could read it. It has to stop.
So he goes on. He says the president, he goes, you have not condemned any of this language. And he's like, senators, where the fuck are you? Mm-hmm. Like, these people are getting threats. A guy who just is a tech for Dominion is getting death threats. The Secretary of State, like, there, his wife's getting, you know, you can only imagine the harassment that's happening to all these people who are named. And then the problem is Trump then doubled down by like tweeting, like sort of retweeting a video of Sterling's press conference and then just tweets rigged election, show signatures and envelopes, expose the massive voter fraud in Georgia. What is Secretary of State and Brian Kemp afraid of? They know what we'll find. Like, this is only creating more and more anger, like to a group of people who are already so pissed off because everything they've been fed through the TV they watch is saying the thing is being stolen right now and Trump actually won. What's going on? This is so unfair. And I just don't, it doesn't, I'm not, I don't know how it de-escalates for anyone at this point, because Trump he's showing no sign of like letting up on this tactic. And I don't think that, I haven't seen any other GOP, you know, politicians actually step up to say, yo, this is fucked up now. Like, you're going to get people in this party that we all claim to be a part of killed, but I don't think, it doesn't matter. It's a fucking death cult. So it's freaky shit.
Yeah. And you know, he pardoned Michael Flynn earlier in the week, and Michael Flynn, or was it last week that he pardoned Michael Flynn? Or earlier this week?
I think it was. I mean, it's like it all.
Yeah.
Was it 4 years ago?
Which time?
4 years ago? I don't know. Yeah.
At some point,
time
in the blur
is,
since the election,
right,
he pardoned Michael Flynn, and Michael Flynn used that opportunity to now call for, he retweeted a call for basically Trump to take over via martial law, temporarily suspend the constitutional and civilian control of the federal elections, and suspend the press. And then, you know, said if that doesn't happen, there's going to be violence unseen since the Civil War. So, like, basically threatening massive terroristic violence on behalf of the president, which, and the mainstream media seems to just be like, yeah, but he's too dumb to like do anything about it. But that's, I mean, look at how the voting officials in Georgia are being treated. These people may be not the greatest operators in the world, but they're deadly serious and, you know, capable of mailing bombs to people and putting nooses outside people's houses. And like, that's, it's, I feel like it's just sort of disappeared for the most part from the mainstream conversation because it's gone so far in this direction of, you know, Lou Dobbs and a couple other opinion-based shows are just going off in this weird counterfactual universe, and it's not like people aren't really taking it seriously, but the people who watch it are ready to start killing us, basically.
A couple things to that. One, so it's like Bill Barr is a great example of like Bill Barr, the dude that like kneecapped the Mueller report, is all of a sudden a liberal extremist because he just said that like, yeah, even if there was fraud, it wouldn't be enough to like change the results of the election. Like, he didn't even say Biden. I mean, he just said like, if there was fraud, it wouldn't be enough to change anything. And like, that was enough to make him into like a liberal extremist. And then the other thing on that, I mean, I think that the hope is that like, you know, I mean, that it's that this is, you know, an emperor's new clothes situation for Trump, where like, you know, I mean, we've seen a lot of stories after the election of, you know, people taking down the Trump flags and people kind of being like, yeah, I'm not with that anymore. And it's like there are, you know, definitely some people that are on the extreme, extreme side of it that are like still down. Hopefully the ones that are still with it tire themselves out.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's
update. Yeah. Doug Ducey is a the governor of Arizona is now a opponent to democracy, according to the Trump administration,
because he certified
Arizona's win.
Yeah, when he put the fucking president on mute when he was calling him as he was certifying the. Did you see that clip?
No,
dude.
No, I didn't see that, but that's dope. That's dope.
It's speculative, but in a previous interview, he said that at a certain point, he was getting so many, like, he talked to the president enough that "Hail to the Chief" is his like ringtone when the president calls him,
right.
And that's how he knows just audibly that this is a different call. It's coming from the land of orange mushrooms. Mm-hmm. And so when he was like at the desk certifying the elections, in the middle of him signing, you hear the fucking like in his phone. And he's like, hold on 1 second. Pulls his phone out and he's like, I'm just silent that shit. And then continues to sign it. And everyone's like, yo,
sick.
If we're lining up past anecdotal things, that was the president calling him mid-certification. He said, nah, fuck out of here, bro. I gotta do this shit. So, yeah, that would have them feeling some type of way. I will say this about Bill Barr, though. He did reveal on Tuesday that he had actually made Durham like a special counsel, a Robert Mueller-level special counsel to investigate the origins of the Russia investigation.
Yeah.
And that was like the kind of thing that people were like, what the fuck is this? And he didn't tell anybody. And on, you know, I think a lot of people are looking at it now. It's like, first of all, Durham had his investigation. We talked about it over the summer. They found nothing.
Right.
That's why they were just very casual. Like, yeah, anyway, we concluded there wasn't really much anything there. So let's just not talk about it anymore. And I remember the Trump administration, and they were all like, you see, we've got this investigation going. Just wait till you see. So Bill Barr doing this, they're thinking like, okay, he's just trying to like appease the president by saying like, I still got it. Don't worry. We're going to get to the bottom of this, even when Biden's president, even though during that investigation we've been spending a lot of time on, we found nothing, while also saying like there was no fraud. So please remember Bill Barr in your fuckery calendars that he'll never be taken off of.
So basically he just did something, an empty gesture to appease the president, but like investigation is not going to continue in any.
No, because the new attorney general can be like, nah, we're good on this. Thank you, sir. Thank you for your time. This special counsel investigation has been concluded. Because also, it's just redundant at this point. Durham did this investigation and found fucking nothing. So what's the point of doing it aside from convincing the president that you're still a good boy?
To call a spade, that there's like so much focus on Arizona and Georgia. It's like, I mean, I don't know, like the black and brown vote flipped those states. Like the black vote was very key in flipping Georgia. The Native vote was very key in flipping Arizona. The Navajo Nation and I think the Apache Rez, the districts that are within those voted like 93% for Biden, you know? So like it's race. It's like racist shit.
Yeah.
It's just like, let's just call it that, you know?
Exactly. It's you know, fear of, you know, the country becoming less white, because it is, and it was inevitable, you know, that's what's happening. But yeah, we'll see. I can't imagine, you know, what kind of fuckery they're going to try and enact in some of these legislatures going into these next couple of years, because remember, Obama kicked off all kinds of next level shit. So I don't know what's on the menu for 20, 2020 and beyond, or 2021 and beyond, but we can only wait and see. But we got to stay vigilant.
Right.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about how we're relaxing after all this bad news.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. And we're back. And if all of the, you know, Trump trying to stage a coup, being too dumb, but still like trying and revealing the fissures of our democracy, if all of that has you stressed out, Pepsi has your answer.
Oh, yeah. They're coming all the way through.
Yeah.
Pepsi is a self-care brand. I want to say just before we talk about this,
yes.
Pepsi is a self-care brand first, beverage company second. They tweeted something Wednesday morning saying like, hey, y'all, like it looks like a fun little box. It says hello, has like a little Pepsi, like two candles. You don't know what it says. It says, quote, when the stress of the holiday finally settles, treat yourself to the perfect Pepsi spa experience. You deserve it. Tag a friend who all anyway. So you got it. This isn't some shit you buy. It's a fucking giveaway. We get it. Viral marketing. We all know this is they do this. So we talk about it. Good job. But we will always talk about this viral marketing stuff because at the end of the day, we are trash consumers.
Yes.
But this one is interesting because, I mean, look, we've had like KFC logs that smell like KFC when you put in the fireplace. Like we have aroma scented things that kind of whatever makes sense. This spa kit, I just want to say, This includes an exfoliating cola-scented Pepsi sugar scrub, a refreshing Pepsi blue face mask, and fizzy fun Pepsi cola-scented bath bomb. They're all saying that this is all like inspired by the flavor and like refreshingness of Pepsi Cola. So I don't know like if your idea of relaxing is to be submerged in a tub full of Pepsi.
Yeah.
But I'm just having trouble getting my mind around that one.
Like the only other time that the idea of being submerged in Pepsi really enters the collective consciousness is when you put a tooth in the Pepsi and it dissolves it like in a matter of hours, like it's the dip from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So like the fact that they think that this is a good idea, that people like want to have the feeling that they're being submerged in Pepsi, is amazing. I applaud. I've always been a fan of Pepsi marketing ever since the documents were revealed of their logo redesign, where it was like the millennial, next millennial. Yeah.
When they got Pepsi, scammed.
When they got scammed for like $20 million logo design that just changed the line to in like 2 inches.
Speaking about efficiency from earlier, I mean, look, if you're eating breakfast while taking a shower, taking a bath in Pepsi seems like a good way to like,
right.
You know, it's like you don't have time to drink a Pepsi, but you also need to take a bath because like you got to get to your job, you know?
And also you need also you want to flex on people. You got a tub full of Pepsi.
Also you want to flex on people by being covered in sticky soda.
A sugar face scrub. Like if I get sugar on my face, I expect to have like acne because sugar is not a thing that cleans your skin. It is like a thing that is sticky and creates a film that you can't get off your skin.
Yeah, but their sugar scrubs are a thing though. Not just like if we take the words sugar scrub. Like
Okay.
Yeah, like any DIY stuff, it's fine, you know, because that was always my first thing. I'm like, would you put sugar on your face? Because all I have is like my mom when I was going through puberty being like, all those sodas are gonna give you pimples.
Yeah.
Like sort of logic in my brain. So just had to debunk that just for sugar, gang out there.
I want to pitch a tagline for that product. And the tagline is, y'all like getting attacked by bees?
Dude, I mean, Jack, I think, would you feel any different if this box was rebranded with your favorite Pepsi Cola product?
Mountain Dew. Not.
Dipped in Dew?
I dipped in Dew, yeah. I mean, dipped in Dew, you're really drawing the comparison to dip because wasn't dip from Who Framed Roger Rabbit like a yellowish, greenish liquid?
It was like that green bubble, like,
It was like toxic, so like, wasty.
Yeah, but like, so Mountain Dew already evokes that. I've always been more of a fan of Mountain Dew for internal use as opposed to topical use.
Got it.
I've tried it in a number of different contexts. It's not a great topical solution.
Can you absorb caffeine through your skin?
I believe so.
So I wonder, if you legit filled up a bathtub with actual Mountain Dew, like 2-liter bottles, like, you know, could you get a little hyped off your bath?
So you,
I think the idea that you can, I'm gonna need a little Pepsi twist to keep me going on this day.
Yeah.
But I don't have time to drink it.
Yeah, I don't think you can actually absorb things as easily through your skin as people think.
SLC Punk, remember that guy had all those acid tabs in his pocket and then ran through the sprinklers?
Well, acid is the one thing that I think you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one holds.
But like alcohol, like, there's always a rumor that you can like bathe in alcohol and get really drunk. And I think that's not true. I did some research into it.
I just want to shout out any listeners that are like scientists. I really want to know the exact, like, how long do you have to sit in a bathtub full of Pepsi for it to equal like one sip of Pepsi?
Right.
Like, what is the math?
Oh, wow.
I want to know the breakdown of like what that
is. I hope the Joe Biden administration will actually divert the funds to this kind of research
rather than
this other crap.
Yeah,
Biden.
Yeah.
Come on, Biden.
Yeah, yeah. Yo, Joe Manchin, defund my butt and use that money to fund Pepsi baths.
Yeah, Pepsi bath research. Come on, come on.
Yeah.
One soda I would like to take a bath in is Sprite Remix from the early aughts.
Ah.
That's a flavor I miss.
Yeah. And that was originally formulated as something to bathe in, and yeah, they just happened to notice that it tasted good.
I think the R&D process was, it was supposed to be a Lysol scent, and then it became a detergent scent, right, and then when that didn't work out, it just became a Sprite flavor.
There are so many things that are that are made that way, where they're like, yeah, like actually, it didn't work that way, but we noticed that it did melt the chocolate bars in our pocket, so now we have microwaves.
Yeah, like microwaves. Yeah. Yeah, like Silly Putty was originally supposed to be like a stealth knife that you can make out of putty to murder Stein. Or, not that, but some, yeah, something
like
that.
The CIA.
It was like, yeah.
Just put a little bit of a lighter underneath and it will harden to steel.
Yeah, it'll harden up and then just form into a blade. Just tick. actually, I want to drop in another underrated thing since we're talking about soda. Virgil's zero calorie root beer from Trader Joe's is like a serviceable root beer, you'd think, because it's zero sugar and zero calories, it wouldn't be good. But like, it's dope as hell. It's good stuff.
Okay,
I love Virgil's. Okay, Virgil's root beer just is like Virgil's, fucking shit.
There's Virgil's like zero calorie, zero sugar, so it's like not. Daniel's dropping it in the chat. Virgil's the best root beer on the market, straight up. Yeah, I mean, yeah. So like, let's just give it up for Virgil's. I would bathe in Virgil's. Like, there's no caffeine in it, so I'm not getting anything out of it other than the joy of bathing in Virgil's.
Okay,
I'm down. Right. Virgil's, hit us up. I'll do that for a marketing campaign. But you got to keep the Virgil's flowing. Because oh, man, they're cream soda, too. Yay!
Yeah. Hit us up. This is not already sponsored content for Virgil's.
I know.
Right. Good one, Miles.
Fuck Virgil's.
Yeah, it is. It's sponsored content for me as I put on my Virgil's hat. And
I know. Like, damn, he got us.
Yeah. I go from podcast to podcast and promote Virgil.
It's
that's
like, no, but
deal.
Think about it. He promoted fucking Garfield, Olive Garden, Virgil's. Yeah, we like Olive look Garden around. Virgil's. We've been like Kaiser Soze'd.
I mean, I am wearing a t-shirt that's got Garfield's picture on it and says Medicare for All. So, you know, like, I'm repping everything. I'm repping all the stuff.
Brand is strong.
And then I just wanted to say for Pepsi, one of my favorite Pepsi specifics is I went to Washington State University in Eastern Washington. They had like an exclusive deal with Coca-Cola. So like on the university campus, you could only buy Coca-Cola products. They didn't have Pepsi. So drinking Pepsi became this act of resistance. So where it's just like, yeah, fuck your corporate branding, really? Pepsi. So for me, yeah, you know, Pepsi's part of the resistance.
Hell yeah. I mean, they always have been ever since that commercial with Kylie Jenner, I think.
Yeah, like Kylie Jenner, where she stopped the riot police with a Pepsi. So, like, yeah. So
that's
good
the resistance,
for you, Kylie
right?
Jenner.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the resistance, Pepsi.
Yeah. Also, if you guys are curious about Biden's cabinet, check out Pod Save America. somebody tweeted that to us as a helpful hint.
Is joke?
Let us know. And finally, let's talk about Melania's Christmas decorations, because people are talking about these for a number of reasons. First of all, it's the first Christmas since Melania was caught on tape saying, who gives a fuck about Christmas? Thanks to Trump, people can say, who gives a fuck about Christmas again, instead of just, who gives a fuck about the holidays? Thank you, Mr. Trump.
The war on Christmas was about being able to openly hate Christmas. That's what the war on Christmas is about,
reclaim
right?
it.
But also, I feel like we should acknowledge and say straight up, like, it is entirely her right to say, who gives a fuck about Christmas? The whole idea that we are judging the First Lady's Christmas decorations every year is like so just like bygone and like backwards that we're like, how'd she do this year?
Right.
And so just get a fucking interior decorator. Like, what are you doing?
Didn't other people just be like, I don't know, this is some celebrity designer did it this year. I'm just, fuck.
But we have to tie it to the First Lady and her domestic skills.
Yes.
Yeah, do we think that she, like, did she actually come up with this design, or do we think that she just approved this design?
I'm sure she approved it. Like, why is this a story? Why is it even tied to her? Like, why do we just be like, here is the brand that we hired to design the White House Christmas. You can, you know, hire them for your weird.
It's just our event. Shit version of Royals watching.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh what's, you know, it's our shitty Royals is Melania, who gives a fuck about Christmas Trump, and being like, who gives a fuck about my decorations? Come peep them. I don't know. Do these look like urns holding plants? I don't, who gives a shit?
Guys, I watched episode 2 and 3 of The Crown, and when I tell you that these grown men and women were responding to the king's death like they so like their loved one had been just been murdered in front of them, it is like the wildest thing I've ever seen. Like how people were just like, he what? This man who was like in his 60s and had one lung and was dying of cancer, they were like acting like JFK had just been assassinated in a seat next to them. Shout out to the royals. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Shout out to JFK. I think there was a JFK ornament on a thing, right? But I, like, just going off what Miles was saying, I feel like a lot of that stuff, it's just like there are built-in fluff pieces within politics that give like ideally politicians, the president, just like easy bumps in approval ratings,
right?
You know, things like, you know, Halloween, things like the Easter egg hunt on the White House lawn and stuff like that. And like I think that like Christmas decorations are definitely one of those things where it's just like, oh, it gives the first family just an excuse to be like, hey, we're just like you guys or whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, I agree that it's I think that more and more, you know, especially under the Trump administration, we're seeing how like it's very dumb that we pay attention to that.
Right.
Yeah. It's we're like getting to see the seams a little bit because somebody who is an actual, like, obvious con man entered the office. So we can see the seams.
Yeah. You always need those, like, those fluff pieces, though, because it helps, like, off ramp serious discourse. Like, we could talk about the drone use in Yemen. Or
yeah,
have
totally.
You seen Bo Obama, the new dog? Uh-oh, everyone. Fuck.
Yeah, well, I mean, just putting myself on blast. Joe Biden announced that he's going to adopt a cat into the White House, and it's going to be the first cat since H.W. Bush, I think. And look, he could do a lot of stuff, and I'm just going to ignore that and just look at these pictures of the new first cat. Very excited.
So,
you know, mission accomplished, Biden. I think that's hell yeah.
Well, look, you got to have, as long as you know both things are going on, just don't exchange one for the other. You know what I mean? Just keep
all
I've
already exchanged one. It's just like,
you're
look,
like, nah, I'm fully
it's like,
cat
we, if
right
we got a police state, but there's a cat at the helm, then
hold on,
like,
hold on, hold on.
And just like, oh, wait a second, there's a cat involved. Oh. Proceed with the drone strikes.
More on that later. This cat is cuddling in a thin blue line blanket.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm tucked in kitties. Oh, that cat's my problematic fave.
One thing we have to look forward to in the Biden administration is how QAnon will look at literally everything Biden family does. Because just a sampling from the past two Christmases, last year, the really bland, non-terrifying decorations that Melania put together, there was a dollhouse with numbers on the windows, and that was, according to QAnoners, full of hidden codes, including a countdown at the beginning of December, which was probably just a countdown to Christmas, but they thought it was a countdown till the storm.
Yeah, it's what I think most people call an advent calendar. But anyway,
It does make sense.
Countdown to Christ.
Like, yeah, just like, you know, like, do your own research. You know, we all get it.
You do the research, man. This year, the First Lady is seen in her Christmas videos putting up a ornament of JFK, which set off the QAnon alarm bells, as you were talking about, Joey, because A, JFK Jr. is still alive, and B, he's living under an assumed name in Pittsburgh, and C, he's a Trump ally. So that was clearly signaling all of that when they put up a Christmas ornament with JFK Sr. on it, and clearly had nothing to do with the fact that it's the 60th anniversary of him being elected to office. Nothing to do with that. Everything
JFK Jr.'s alive.
He is alive, you guys.
What a jump.
John Reese, Trumper Waven, at Trumper Waven on Twitter, showed the picture of her putting the ornament up and said, Melania Trump literally put up JFK as a Christmas ornament. How many more coincidences? Exclamation point. And then somebody in the comments, that, by the way, that had like 5,000 like so many likes. And this person in the comments said, that is this year's White House Christmas ornament. which is like each year they have an official Christmas ornament, and that's this year's.
How many more coincidences? Even then, it's the official. Right. Oh, wow.
Even more. Okay. Even more so.
I just want to say, just because podcasting is an audio medium, to everybody listening to this, we definitely are the Hollywood elite casually drinking the blood of infants as we're having this podcast conversation.
Oh, yeah. So, I'm mainlining adrenochrome.
Yeah, I'm just, hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Oh, they're believing every, oh my God, they're seeing it. They're not like, believing it.
I'm stealing the youth from babies. I'm 200 years old.
But can you imagine all the just amazingly intricate shit they're going to accuse Joe Biden of as he's just being like, come on, Jack.
I mean, they're already doing it. Like his, like he fractured his foot or something like that recently.
Allegedly.
And, because he's, allegedly. And because he's like wearing a boot, QAnon people are already, because like part of their thing is like, oh, like if you think about it, like all liberal politicians always wear pants that covers their ankle. Really, they're doing it to cover like, you know, secret, like, tracking devices.
Bracelet.
Because
hold on.
Yeah.
He broke his left foot, my left foot, Daniel Day Lewis in a boot, DOS boot, left boot, DOS boot about Nazis, leftism, socialism. Joe Biden is the fourth Fuhrer.
Preach.
Got it.
Snap.
Got him,
preach.
Joe
got
Biden.
Him. Boom.
Got Biden again.
Yeah. Don't know how many more coincidences we need to point out to you guys.
You know what happened? Wearing a boot and JFK's, and there was a countdown. I don't know.
Come on, guys. Who's naive now?
Right. Who's naive now?
Yeah.
Joey, it's been so fun having you on the Daily Zeitgeist, man. Where can people find you and follow you?
Yeah, this is super fun. Thanks for having me. You can find me on Twitter at Joey Tainment. You can find me on Instagram at Joey Clift with like five I's. If you check out my social media, you can watch a video of me eating $300 worth of Olive Garden lasagna with my bare hands like Garfield. It's very gross and not an efficient way to eat lasagna. But I think that's the thing.
Was it
plug.
Hot?
And then watch. So it was definitely hot? I bought it. But then I just like, I let it sit out for a little bit. And that was the thing I was the most worried about is like, am I going to burn my face horribly by throwing hot cheese in my face?
Yeah.
So it wasn't, I would say that it was like slightly above lukewarm by the time that I actually did it. But that was by choice of me being like, okay, I don't want to scar my face for this bit. Yeah. I mean, I do. I just shouldn't.
And is there a tweet or some other work of, you were going to talk about the Netflix show, I believe.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Just watch Spirit Rangers when it comes out in probably 2022. Yeah. It's a great show. It's going to be super fun. Everybody check it out. It's on Netflix. It's great. Support native art because that's important to do. Natives are making cool stuff. And then a tweet that I wanted to bring up was by a friend of the show at Katie Golden. She had a super funny tweet yesterday that was, I'm going to quote the tweet, 30 under 30 lists are fucking stupid. There are way more 30-year-olds than that, I swear to God. And I just like scrolled past that yesterday and it's like, oh, Katie's super funny. That's also just a good, like, I've never heard of a 30 under 30 list boiled down to like, there's more than 30 people that are under 30.
Guys.
Yeah, just like, pardon me.
Oh, man. Miles, where can people find you? What's a tweet you've been enjoying?
A few tweets I like. One is from at Very Harry Hill. Harry Hill tweets, imagine if there was a Venmo Wrapped, because everyone's posting their Spotify Wrapped like things right now. And I could, whoa. There are so many times I look at people, I'm like, you are buying drugs on Venmo and you're not being slick about it. Like you're doing snowflakes and rainbows and shit. And I'm like, okay. Like moons. And I'm like, okay, is that moon rocks? And they're like, how'd you know? I'm like, because you did a fucking moon emoji with a rock, fool. The fuck are you talking about? Some of these young kids, man, they're slipping on Venmo. So I like that tweet. Another tweet that I am liking is from Ben Acker at Bean Acker. Says, fund the non-police. Is that better? Maybe. It might work better than that. And then lastly, a tweet that I like just kind of resonated with me, like just I think most people, I think millennials as well, just with how our careers evolve to a certain extent. And this tweet is from Alexandra Jones at A Rock Jonestown. tweeting, raise your hand if you didn't start in your field until your 30s. And that is my shit. I did not get my shit together until I was like literally 30. It was like when I started finally moving in a direction that was like my, what feels like my career. Before that, all kinds of shit. All like trying to figure it out, and also not a lot of opportunities to get there. But yeah,
I've been studying to be a podcaster since fifth grade. That's just
damn.
Me. Yeah.
Yeah. When you had that, when you had that ham radio.
Yeah. And the one room schoolhouse that I went to fifth grade.
I'm trying to work into the career of being a professional Garfield impersonator. And like, look, I just haven't made any headway yet. My 40s are going to be the year, I think.
Yeah.
That's when it's all coming together.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like getting lasagna, got a Garfield shirt. It's just, it's all coming together.
A couple tweets I've been enjoying. Mr. CEO, speaking of Venmo, tweeted, I hate pending payments. Just take that shit so I can start my healing process.
Oof.
And then Brody Reed, AO Bro Bro, tweeted, we need to stop using plastic, and as a replacement, I suggest the same wax we use for Baby Bell cheese.
Shit.
I do love
also
that.
Also, Brody Reed, super funny. I like Brody Reed.
One of the funniest dudes. I love that dude.
Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we ride out on. Miles, what are we riding into the rest of this Thursday upon?
Come on. We're doing Street Fighter music.
Oh, man. We're going to do this track from Baths, who's from L.A. area producer. You know, this is a track from like 10 years ago. It was the first Baths track I ever heard, and I only got into it because like the video had like this like samurai dude like bleeding in the forest. I've been playing a lot of Ghost of Tsushima, so I was like, oh, I just remember that track in the video. This track is called Lovely Blood Flow by Baths, and this has got like, you know, it's like haunted but like very laid back at the same time. So it sounds like the when you're realizing you're about to have a panic attack. It's like, oh, well, maybe, I don't know, but it's right now, I don't know, there's tension there though, but this track sort of encapsulates a lot of energies at once, so I really like it, and I think you will too.
One of my favorite feelings, the pre-panic attack.
Yeah,
guys, if like, you love that unsettling feeling I just described for you, you're gonna love this.
Just that like sweet, like, yo, am I having a panic attack, or do I just listen to Baths? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, man, but I feel some, it's a vibe.
Yeah, I feel some, I'm not dead.
All right. Well, The Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That's going to do it for this morning. We're back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we'll talk to you all then. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.